Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. This is our final episode in the series War and Peace. Given Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, a lot of people were asking questions about the church's teaching on just war, what that's all about. So we've been going through the catechism on this issue, and it was all, of course, under the banner of the fifth commandment, you shall not kill, / you shall not murder. I think it's probably better translated that way. But there's one more issue left to consider, and that's the issue of nuclear warfare. In light of Vladimir Putin's claim that the nuclear option is not off the table in this conflict, something that should send chills down all of our spines, we have to ask the question, is it ever morally licit to use atomic weapons? And this is an important question for Americans because, of course, America was the first nation to use them in the end of World War II, atomic bombs being dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan. Someone who's written a lot about this and thought about this is Christopher Cech, the Catholic writer and historian. And he's now the president of Catholic Answers in San Diego. And I had a chance to sit down and have lunch with him a couple of years ago out in San Diego while I was attending a conference. And he told me, hey, if you're in San Diego, you gotta go to Rubio's. Rubio's Fish Tacos. And I had never heard of this. I've heard of fish tacos, obviously, but that was the first time I went there. I got to tell you, he was right about that. They were absolutely delicious. And as we were enjoying our fish tacos, and believe me, I would fly back to California just to go to Rubio's. That's how great they are. We also had a lot of food for thought on this issue of atomic weapons because we had a conversation about it. And he articulated the Catholic position on this in a way that I'd never heard. And he also wrote an article about this in 2011. In Catholic Answers magazine. It was called Dropping the Atomic Bomb Was Wrong, period. And I want to share with you his thoughts on this because I think that they're challenging. For a lot of us, they will be thought-provoking and might change your mind a little bit about this issue. A lot of Americans are very much of the mind that this was the right thing to do, dropping the atomic bombs in 1945. On Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Many people will say, hey, that's what ended World War II. And people will also have personal stories about this. And Christopher Cech noted, it's very common to run into people who will say, my grandfather was on a ship bound for Japan. He was supposed to engage in the land invasion of Japan. That never happened because the atomic bomb was dropped. So therefore, my grandfather survived. I wouldn't be here right now if that hadn't happened. Some people will even say that it was a just revenge for Pearl Harbor. Or, you know, they mentioned the atrocities that the Japanese committed in Nanking. But is this really a moral act, the dropping of the atomic bomb? Christopher Cech points out that every single pope that has ever sat on the chair of St. Peter since this time, the Second Vatican Council, hundreds of bishops all over the world, and many distinguished theologians, apologists, speakers, have all condemned the dropping of the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church is actually pretty straightforward about this as well. And Cech notes this. Christopher Cech says that Catholics are divided on this issue about whether or not it was moral to drop the atomic bomb. In fact, he thinks that as many as half of Catholics in the United States today approve of the actions of then-President Harry Truman to drop the bombs. Why is this the case? Why are Catholics divided on this issue? We're going to explore this on this episode of The Faith Explained. I'm Cale Clark here on Relevant Radio. So Christopher Cech brings about two reasons that he gives for Catholic support of the dropping of the bombs in 1945. The first reason he says many support this action was because of distance. And I'll explain that. That's true on a couple of levels. The second reason is what he calls Americanism. And it's not just Christopher Czech. That term was actually coined by Pope Leo XIII. So let's look first of all at the problem of distance. Now, Czech mentions the work of the retired Army Ranger, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who's a frequent guest here on Relevant Radio. In 1995, he wrote a book called On Killing. And in that book, he examines how physical distance also creates emotional distance when it comes to taking a human life. And so he's got a lot of data to back this up. And he basically says that a soldier is much more trepidatious about, say, killing an enemy combatant at close range with a knife or a bayonet or even a shot from one's rifle, a lot more willing to resist that than is a bomber pilot, for example, who is thinking about dropping a bomb or ordered to drop a bomb on a civilian neighborhood. Does he have any qualms about that? Not so much. So Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman says that he did not find in his research one single incident in which a soldier refused to fire a long-range weapon. So, for example, launching a missile or dropping a bomb. He actually never found anybody who was unwilling to do such a thing. And not only that, he says that he didn't find a single instance of psychiatric trauma associated with killing at long range. And by the way, this encompassed even the pilot and the crew of the Enola Gay, which was, of course, the B-29 super fortress that dropped the atomic bomb, which was named Little Boy, on the people of Hiroshima. And Czech reports that the pilot of the Enola Gay, who was named Colonel Paul Tibbetts, actually went to his death claiming that he never lost one night of sleep over dropping the A-bomb on Hiroshima. In fact, he actually reenacted this event many times at air shows that he participated in before his own death. And so that is in stark contrast, the fact that these long-range bombers and military actors don't have any hesitation to do such things, nor any psychological trauma afterwards. Not one single case was found by Dave Grossman. That's a lot different than those who fight in close combat. There's a lot of psychological trauma and PTSD among soldiers who fight in the infantry, who are in close range combat. Grossman also talks about pilots who firebombed the cities of Hamburg, Dresden, and Tokyo in World War II. 400,000 non-combatants, mostly women, children, and the elderly, died in these raids. Why is that? Because anybody who was of fighting age was somewhere else off fighting. And Grossman reports that these bombers of these cities were fascinated. They felt satisfied by what they did, but there was no guilt. There was no regret. So basically his argument here is that one of the reasons why people are comfortable with the idea of the United States dropping atomic bombs on these cities is because of distance from the event. In Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the atomic bombs killed about 180,000 civilians. Now, Christopher Czech asks this question: would supporters of these bombings be just as in favor of it if a battalion of Marines had been sent into the same cities to bayonet an equal number of women, children, and the elderly? And he knows what he speaks here because Christopher Czech is a former U.S. Marine in the infantry division. So he's done a lot of studying on this, and that's a great perspective to have. And it's not just the distance of those who dropped the bombs from those who died. It's also a fact of distance of time for all of us at this point, because almost 8 decades have passed since the events that ended World War II with the atomic bomb drops. And way back in 2009, there was a poll that was done at Quinnipiac University that said that only 1 out of 5 Americans are certain the dropping of the atomic bombs in 1945 was wrong. So distance, both in terms of those who were dropping bombs and also distance in time, that's a factor in people's perception of the morality of the event. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. This is the final episode in our series, War and Peace, looking at the Church's teaching on war in light of the war in Ukraine. So we're looking at the morality of the use of the atomic bomb in World War II. And although this did help to bring about the end of the war, was it through moral means? This is an important question in light of Vladimir Putin's insistence that a nuclear option is not off the table in this modern day conflict. The other thing that Christopher Cech mentions with respect to the way people think about whether American use of the atomic bombs in 1945 was morally licit is something called Americanism. So Cech says that Americans have a blind spot when it comes to evaluating political actions on the international level by the United States, because they're seen as patriotic events. And patriotism, of course, is a great virtue. Loving your native land, that's a great virtue, all things being equal. But there is a danger of this becoming nationalism. Now, nationalism is a vice. That's an excessive veneration of one's country and its government. And Pope Leo XIII, in the year 1899, he actually coined the term Americanism, and he said it was basically a heresy. And Christopher Cech says that Americanism is just as active in our day as it was in Pope Leo's day. So where does this come from, by the way? Where does this come from? And I would argue that it's not just on the national level. It also filters down to one's choice of political party. Obviously, America is deeply divided today. And people, no matter what party they belong to, have a sense of my party is always correct. There's very little nuance out there. The other guys are evil. That can sometimes get into the realm of political parties as well. And so where does this concept of Americanism come from? Well, this comes from, it can be kind of traced back to, as Cech does, he traces it back to John Winthrop, who really fired people up in the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1630 with this concept that they were building something that was commanded by Scripture, this shining city on a hill. Herman Melville, the author who wrote Moby Dick, in the year 1850, he said these words, quote, "Americans are the peculiar chosen people, the Israel of our time. We bear the ark of the liberties of the world. God has predestinated," I don't know if that's a word or not, but God has predestinated, "mankind expects great things from our race and great things we feel in our souls. Long enough have we been skeptics with regard to ourselves and doubted whether indeed the political Messiah had come, but he has come in us," end of quote. So Melville said that America is the political Messiah. Wow. In the 20th century, Cech notes that John F. Kennedy, who was the first Catholic president of the United States, and also Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, they used this shining city, and of course that comes from, of course, the gospel, the words of Jesus, a city on a hill cannot be hidden. And so this idea that America is a shining city on a hill, which was used by Winthrop, it was appropriated by Kennedy as well as Ronald Reagan. And then he talks about someone who I hadn't heard about before, and maybe you have, Phyllis Schlafly. I had not heard of her before I read this article by Christopher Cech. But Phyllis Schlafly founded something called the Eagle Forum. And during the presidency of Ronald Reagan, she said these words. This was back in 1982 in the New York Times. She said, quote, "The atomic bomb is a marvelous gift that was given to our country by a wise God, end of quote. Now, obviously, this was at the height of the Cold War tensions between the United States and the former Soviet Union. In 1995, about a decade or so later, Phyllis Schlafly also defended the atomic bomb as a lifesaver bomb, she called it, that saved the lives of, quote, thousands of our best and brightest young men, end of quote. It should be noted as well, and Czech does say this, that 12 U.S. Navy pilots also perished in Hiroshima. They were prisoners of war at the time. That's often not mentioned by historians of the event. So basically, Phyllis Schlafly, when she said the atomic bomb was a marvelous gift given to our country by a wise God, again, this is Americanism, which was warned about by Pope Leo XIII. But as Czech notes, really, her argument summarizes really the heart of all the arguments made in defense of the atomic bomb. There's basically two points that are made. Number one, dropping the bomb was a good thing because, why? It produced good effects. What are the good effects? Well, it ended the war. It caused the Japanese to surrender. It saved lives, American and Japanese lives, that would have been lost in any kind of land invasion of Japan. And people debate the numbers on this, and some of the numbers are quite spectacular. Lots of hyperbole, not too much substantiation, according to Czech. But the U.S. government's own estimate of what the American casualties would have been in a land invasion was about 50,000. 50,000. So this is the utilitarian approach. This idea that dropping the bomb was better than risking potentially millions of casualties. Would it have been that many? We don't know. But yes, many innocent civilians would have been lost. Their lives would have been lost in a land invasion as well. But we do know that there were quite a few non-combatants, thousands and thousands of them, that did die during the dropping of the bombs. So the second reason that it's normally put forth for saying that dropping the bomb was a good idea was that, as I mentioned off the top, this idea that it saved the lives of one's ancestors. So every time when this debate comes up, people will write in letters to the editor saying how, again, their grandfather was on a ship bound for a land invasion, was called back when the bomb was dropped. Therefore, ergo, I am alive today. My grandfather perished. I wouldn't be here because of this. So therefore, it was a good thing that the bomb was dropped. Well, as Czech notes, none of these reasons give us any light on whether dropping the bomb was moral or immoral. You can't judge the morality of an act based upon the consequences of the act. He says it's very, very dangerous on the moral level. And this is actually a kind of moral reasoning that's known as consequentialism. And that was first coined by the philosopher Elizabeth Anscombe. She was a convert to Catholicism. She actually influenced C.S. Lewis and also Alasdair MacIntyre. She called this consequentialism. It basically says that the right action is the action that produces the best possible consequences. But if we just think about it for a little bit, this is not a good thing. There are a lot of problems with this. A great example in our modern time is abortion. Those who defend abortion make a lot of consequentialist arguments. For example, they will say abortion spares a child who would be born into some kind of trying circumstances. For example, a broken home or born into poverty, that sort of thing. Worldly misery. And as Czech writes, quote, Catholics should sense the absurdity of sparing someone a life of misery by taking his life, whether at the beginning or near the end, end of quote. So a good end, this is a basic moral principle, a good end does not justify an evil means. The end does not justify the means. St. Paul writes in Romans chapter 3, verse 8, we cannot do evil so that good may come about. So we can't always look at just the outcomes, where there's going to be a good outcome when we're looking at the morality of acts. We've got to look at the act itself. So let's look at the act of dropping the bomb. Christopher Check says, and I quote, "The difficulty arises when we are faced with a moral decision that appears wrong, but seems to have good effects, as in the case of the atomic bomb, where the deliberate killing of 180,000 Japanese civilians saved lives, as Phyllis Schlafly argued, or ended the war, as Truman argued. We need to evaluate the morality of the act in and of itself. Is it ever right deliberately to take an innocent life? We know from the natural law and from the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, that the answer is no. This is the sin of murder, which is why Elizabeth Anscombe in 1956 wrote a pamphlet opposing Oxford University's decision to grant President Harry S. Truman an honorary degree. She wrote, quote, "For men to choose to kill the innocent as a means to their ends is always murder, and murder is one of the worst of human actions," end of quote. The pamphlet is called Mr. Truman's Degree, and you can find it and read it online. It's well worth reading for, among other reasons, its careful treatment of the question, who is innocent in times of war? Defenders of the bomb will argue that the citizens of Nagasaki and Hiroshima were not innocent because these industrial centers were central to the Japanese war effort. The previously cited letter to the editor argued that Japanese civilians were willingly supplying their troops with the arms used against our military forces. Now, the extent to which they were is debated by the same scholars who wonder if the bomb really precipitated the end of the war. But it should be noted that ground zero of Hiroshima was the city center, and that many of Hiroshima's suburban factories suffered little damage from the bomb. Moreover, neither city endured conventional bombing during the air campaign against Japan because they were not even among the Bomber Command's top 30 cities. Truman's words, when confronted with the possibility of dropping a third bomb, reveal his knowledge of his action. He said, quote, "The thought of wiping out another 100,000 people was too horrible." And that was quoted, he was quoted there by the Secretary of Commerce, Henry Wallace, end of quote. So Truman says, all right, wiping out another 100,000 people, that's too much. But the first 180,000, that was okay. It doesn't seem to make sense. So again, we have to go back to the concept of just war. Now, in our last episode, we looked at the four conditions that are necessary for a just war. Obviously, if there are enemy soldiers, they are legitimate targets in a just war. Civilians are not. So let's look at, again, the four elements of just war, just to reiterate those. And again, this is a last resort. Pope St. John Paul II said it is an absolute last resort. It's a human failure if war happens in the first place. Now, St. Augustine is really well known for developing this doctrine of just war theory, and he actually was influenced himself from Cicero. And the Catechism says this, and we talked about this in the last episode. Here are the four conditions that need to be met. Number one, the damage caused by the aggressor nation must be grave. Number two, all other efforts at peace must be shown to be unworkable. In other words, diplomacy has failed. Number three, there must be a real prospect of success. And number four, the use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. The power of modern means of destruction weighs very heavily in evaluating this condition. And that last clause, that fourth element, has obviously a lot to say with respect to the dropping of atomic weapons, the dropping of the bombs in 1945. So that was from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 2309. And again, like we talked about before, once a just war has been determined, that doesn't mean that anything goes in a war. Anything that happens is licit. All morality goes out the window. Christopher Check says this concept is known as total war, and it's condemned by the church. You can't target non-combatants. proportionality is also key here. And this is what it says in paragraph 2314 of the Catechism. It says, every act of war directed to the indiscriminate destruction of whole cities or vast areas with their inhabitants is a crime against God and man, which merits firm and unequivocal condemnation. And that's actually, the Catechism there is quoting Gaudium et Spes from Vatican II. It goes on to say, a danger of modern warfare is that it provides the opportunity to those who possess modern scientific weapons, atomic, biological, or chemical weapons, to commit such crimes. So that's exactly explaining what happened with the dropping of the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Whole cities destroyed, vast areas with their inhabitants, a crime against God and man. And Czech says, amazingly, some Catholics think this doesn't apply to the use of atomic bombs in 1945 because those cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are not specifically named. Well, it also doesn't talk about the genocide of Catholics and the French Revolution, the Tokyo, Hamburg, or Dresden air campaigns. But all of those were also deliberate acts of war against civilians meant to really create terror. And those were also morally illicit. At any rate, this is clearly an immoral act, I believe. I think this really makes it very, very sensible to say that. There's no proportionality here. So this, as Czech says at the end of this, in the quote, in the face of so much teaching on the use of nuclear weapons, it seems impossible to believe that a serious Catholic would defend the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He says that one of the great things about being a Catholic is that we can accept church teaching. God has given us the magisterium of the church to guide us in matters of faith and morality. We don't have to figure out everything on our own. And this is not putting our brain on the shelf, by the way. A lot of non-Catholics think that we're just sort of giving our mind over to the church. That's not it. It's a very considered decision of humility to think that, you know what, maybe I can't figure all this out on my own. Maybe the church has been given a lot of wisdom, the Holy Spirit, through the centuries. Theologians, doctors of the church, popes, bishops, together with scripture and sacred tradition. There's a great history here that I can't outsmart in my own mind, and it's better to submit your intellect to the teaching office of the church that Jesus Christ himself has set up. He did it for us. That's actually one of the smartest things we can ever do. For The Faith Explained, I'm Cale Clark. Thank you so much for joining me for this series on war and peace and Catholic teaching about those two very, very important topics. If you've got an idea for a show, maybe something you'd like us to cover, why not send us an email, faith@relevantradio.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @CaleClark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We'll see you in the next episode of The Faith Explained. God bless you.